Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on today's programme.
We chose to keep only one property open. We even mentioned the term, don't turn off the candles, because we had that romantic feeling about once you close down a hotel, it's over. It's also a symbolic step.
This year hasn't been kind to the hospitality sector. From curfews, lockdowns, to restrictions on travelling and socialising, it's been a tough couple of months for those in the industry. But not all has been lost. This week we hear how the beachside hotels in Rio de Janeiro have fared, bring you a highlight from our panel's discussion on the future of hotels from our Chiefs Conference, and leave the city to relish in the delights of agriturismo in Italy. That's all coming up right here on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. So let's get started in Brazil, one of the worst hit nations by the coronavirus pandemic. There are currently over 5 million confirmed cases, and in June, as many as 95% of all independent hotels across the country were closed. Rio de Janeiro has traditionally been one of the most standout tourist destinations. So our Latin America affairs correspondent, Lucinda Elliott, takes us to the beachside hotels to test the temperature of the hospitality industry.
As many as half of Rio's hotels had yet to determine whether they would reopen at all in early August. Only 10% of owners said by September they would be ready to receive guests, and another 10% wouldn't even consider it until November. With this year's annual New Year's Eve celebration cancelled and carnival parades curtailed, the city's Southern Hemisphere summer high season will inevitably take a hit. The majority of hotels chose to close 6 months ago, despite them being deemed an essential service and allowed to remain open, as caseloads in Brazil catapulted into the thousands. The Art Deco Copacabana Palace first made headlines when it shut for the first time in its 97-year history in early April. Run by the Belmond Luxury Group, it was also one of the first to welcome guests again, less than 4 months on, alongside some other big names this August. But the Palace is, and has long been, the hospitality attraction in Rio, serving up cocktails to the famous and the fabulous, from Fred Astaire and Princess Diana, to Bardo, Jagger and Justin Bieber, all with a prominent location and comfortable chain money behind it. So what about the newcomers and independents? Just what are they doing to survive? The Arpoador, a small 50-room hotel that sits on a rock outcropping between Ipanema and Copacabana beaches, has got seriously creative. Where the city meets the sea is their motto, which owner Daniel, who revamped his parents' business last year, has adapted to attract local customers and promote themselves over and above the competition throughout the pandemic.
Since we opened the new Arpoador in January 2019, locals have been attracted to the various services we offer, such as the yoga practice, massage session, day uses of our roof terrace, and ultimately sleeping in the hotel. One third of the guests in September were from Rio. In addition to that, we are creating new experiences to be enjoyed by both guests and locals. Those experiences are totally integrated with nature, such as canoeing in the sea nearby and a six-hour sail in Guanabara Bay with the Arp Beach Bar chef grilling and serving local seafood on board.
Swashbuckling boat rides, savasana on the sand, and the only hotel bar come restaurant directly off Ipanema's cobbled seafront promenade, where cariocas can snap a selfie, are certainly capturing attention. Daniel explains that the decision to reopen his hotel was because of demand.
We closed down both our hotels located in Rio de Janeiro, namely the Arpoador and the Ipanema Inn, in the last week of March this year. Hotels are considered essential services, so there was no obligation to close them down. We did so, as most of the hotels in town did, because there were barely no guests. As the city got to phase number 5 of the lockdown period in August, we decided to reopen the Arpoador, and this was due to popular demand.
A little further along, at the start of Copacabana, near the old fort, is the Emiliano Rio. With an impressive facade made from fiberglass panels designed by American architect Chad Oppenheim, it's the high-end newbie among the more established locations on the seafront. The hotel has had to work harder to stand out since it opened in 2018. But by having to hustle ahead of the outbreak, it appears the Emiliano was better prepared than most when it closed in March. Their main hotel is situated in the business hub of São Paulo and caters to corporate clients. So the Rio team had been showing off what their beachside residents could do for new guests, even if you weren't staying the night, or having a drink at its rooftop bar. Celebratory picnics for Mother's Day, baby showers, and romantic anniversary evenings were already being sent door to door to be enjoyed at home, napkins and tablecloths included. The spacious modern interiors at a socially acceptable distance, plus a set of apartments for longer-term stays, have turned out to be an unexpected bonus for clients looking to shelter from the virus, now that doors have reopened. Owner and CEO Gustavo Filgueiras explains.
The Emiliano is a very caring brand. We take care of our clients. So during the pandemic, the first thing we do was to take the Emiliano to the clients' homes. They were at home, they were lonely, and we said, oh, we have to take a little bit or take care of our clients. So we did several videos with different contents, scenes, how to cook our special recipes, how to make up the bed the way we did, even telling you how do we put our pillows in a straight way and standing position. So it was a very interesting that we had a great feedback from clients and we had a constant and active communication with them. But after the reopening, we became a destination where the local guy from Rio was looking to run from their homes. They're staying for a long time at home, and people are willing to celebrate, and Brazilians are celebrating people. And they are looking spaces where they can go or place where they can go to have fun and to change a little bit the environment where they're living. So we're having special demand for weekends and for celebration. We're selling our best rooms. And this is happening. The behavior of the traveler is changing. And of course, when you cannot predict exactly how this is going to be, we get concerned about it. But mainly, people are traveling less, but they are traveling better. They're doing longer trips, and they're looking for brands they can trust. They're not looking for the best rate anymore. They're really looking for the brands where they can be confident of staying there and being safe. This is something that the Emiliano brands take advantage of it because we already have a very strong discipline about service, about procedures, about taking care of our clients. In Brazil now it's happening that the wealthy Brazilians, as they cannot travel abroad, they are traveling inside Brazil and they are really, really rediscovering Brazil. Brazil has amazing things to do, amazing destinations, and they used to travel abroad and going for international markets, and now it has a big shift that I really believe that it's going to become permanent. So I think the domestic market in Brazil is going to grow a lot. And mainly the luxury destinations will suffer less with this change of behavior. And this is something that's happening in Brazil. Talking about Rio de Janeiro, after the Olympics, the city got, for different reasons, a very bad image about. And a lot of travelers, they used to go there, they stopped going. And now, with the situation that they're traveling inside Brazil, Rio is one of the top destinations. And mainly people from São Paulo and Minas Gerais that were the main travelers for Rio, they are just rediscovering the city. So this is something I think is a really, really permanent change for the city. And I'm very confident for the tourism and the leisure market in Rio for the following years.
With this newfound confidence that Brazilians will turn to Brazil as we enter the summer season, perhaps dear Rio has a reason to samba after all. For Monocle, I'm Lucinda Elliott.
Thanks, Lucinda. Later in the show, we're going to retreat to the Italian countryside. You're listening to The Urbanist. Stay with us. Now, it's no secret that the hospitality industry has been through the most extraordinary pressures over the course of this year. And that's why when we held our chief summit last month, we were keen to hear from people directly involved in it, to understand just how the past couple of months have shaped their businesses. For us, here at Monocle, hospitality has always been seen as a great welcome to a country or a brand and something that makes us feel secure. Recently, hotels have been going through a transformation where lobbies have become an extension of the workplace or turned into packed bars at night. That transformation has also been challenged in recent months. So, looking ahead, what is going to be the function of a hotel, an inn, or an albergo? Well, I was joined on stage by Paul Geertman, the founder of Aedas Real Estate, Ruth Kramer and Thomas Schacht, the owners of the family-run Brucke 49, and by Christoph Hoffmann, who's the CEO of 25 Hours Hotels. We kicked things off with Christoph. I asked him what the past few months have been like and just how nerve-wracking it's all been.
I have to explain the private and the business version of it. The private one was excellent because I was lucky to be in Switzerland in a very isolated valley, and it was just beautiful to be all by yourself. And I could see for the first time how snow is melting all the way down until the cows come up to the grass. So that was really nice. I loved it. And at the same time, I experienced how it is to be on Teams calls every day. It was a very interesting experience because before that I was traveling all the time and I didn't have time to really think of things a little deeper, and that was a very good experience. From a business point of view, it was maybe traumatic, I don't even know, but to me it was, I founded a company with my partners in 2005, and since then it was always a success story, kind of. We never had any real existential problems with the company. And then all of a sudden, when you are in a phase where you believe everything is safe and nothing can happen anymore, then you have something which you never expected to happen. And that was another interesting experience for me personally. The company as such is, like everybody else, in big trouble. But since everybody else is also in big trouble, it's not that troublesome anymore, to me at least, because somehow there must be a reason. And at least we, with our brand, with our product, we feel now that we can get better out of this crisis than maybe other hotel products.
You're lucky to be in Switzerland, where the country has got going much quicker. But just tell us, at the worst moments in the pandemic, were the hotels closed? Did you have occupancy in single figures?
Well,
how difficult did it get?
We only closed, we have 14 properties altogether. And in those cities, namely Hamburg, Frankfurt and Zurich, where we have more than one property, we chose to keep only one property open. We even mentioned the term, don't turn off the candles, because we had that romantic feeling about once you close down a hotel, it's over. It's also a symbolic step. And that's why we said we want to keep it open also for our employees, for our staff, and also for possible opportunities. Because back then we didn't know what's going to happen in places like Berlin. Can we supply rooms for important business who's coming over? So at the end of the day, we were lucky that we kept it open, because now we believe that it was easier for us to ramp up again after things are getting better. But that was kind of, I couldn't say strategy, but that was our idea of working on it.
We heard there about the pleasures of watching the snow melt and kind of being up in the mountains, all the great fresh air. Did you have the opposite experience, that you were turning people away because people were leaving the city and they wanted to come up for some fresh air to raise their gaze and to think afresh?
I think it could be much worse than what we have experienced in our little business. We had a tremendous season. We have seen people escaping the cities and coming to the mountains and having a good time. We are used to having a lot of requests, but this year we actually thought we needed more people to handle all the requests we have, and it's crazy for such a small place.
So you've been working at almost maximum capacity across the season?
We came out of a occupancy rate, but about 80. I think we are at 100 and maybe 100 plus. I don't know.
It's a totally opposite world, because we are, of course, we're also scared to begin with. You don't know what is in front of you, and you see a beast and you can't feel it. And first we closed down, and suddenly we could see the demand of people wanting to go to the mountains. And since we have some apartments where people can sustain themselves, they just phoned us, they checked in, we didn't see them, they paid online, they checked out. So we had a business which were totally sustainable, and we didn't even know that we have created something new where you just feel safe in the mountains. And for us, you know, we just looked at each other and said, wow, that is magic, this one. And also being in Valls in this period where everybody was scared and you could just walk around and you could feel the fresh nature and you could swim in the rivers and you could see people were carefully talking to each other. So for us, it was a wonderful experience for our small business. So we have great confidence in the future in that sense that where we are and what nature holds and what nature gives to people is something which is the future for our business. We didn't know that we were doing something special. We did what we felt for. We have been traveling the world with our jobs previously. We have been in big hotels. We have experienced super service, but also this a little bit unpersonal, not being close to people.
First of all, we would like to say that at Brücke 49, if you can imagine, it's like you come to a person's home more than you come to a hotel. And we decided from the beginning try to make this new category and also look at it in a different way. Our leading sentence was, come as guest, leave as friend. This also embodies everything we do and what we try to obtain and the success criteria we work with. We decided to be independent from the beginning. That means we are on no booking platforms. We don't have a booking system where you need to go online and to do that. You simply have to call us or to email us because we want that dialogue. It's important that people understand what the house is about and that you can freely move around, that we don't take any money up front, that we just trust people like friends. And also, we want to get an idea of the people coming, if we are at all able to meet their expectations, which is very important. So when people stand in the door, arriving at us, they're prepared. They know what they're coming up to, and we have an idea who they are and what they expect from us.
We said that we'd look at the future of hospitality. Maybe a question that both of you could pick up. Paul, perhaps we could start with you first. You've been an operator. You've worked with partners. I'm not saying it's frustrating working with operators and partners, but Paul's decided he's going to do it himself going forward. He's going to go out and make his own hotels. And interestingly, you're looking at opening, instead of a vast property, something a bit smaller and a bit compact as part of your new move. Could you tell us why you're making the leap over at this point to say, hey, this is a really good time to become a hotel owner, and what you hope to deliver?
I need to talk about the frustration first. So
you can get it out of me. We've got a punch bag up here. A lot of people need it today.
But for the audience to understand where we come from. So we come from the property side, and we have been working with operators for a long time. And that's where there's benefit. But if you work with them for 15 years, there's also frustration, as we said. And this is a pre-COVID decision. We decided that we wanted to be our own operator. And that was actually a very logical step in the development of our company. So we're setting up this new hotel brand. And we have three properties that we start with, two in Amsterdam and one in Spain. The one in Spain is smaller, as you indicated. One of the two in Amsterdam is very small. It's 14 rooms. But we enjoy working with properties that have potential. If you can get it right and get the best out of it, that's where we get our satisfaction. So it doesn't have to be per se big. The effort is the same. So if we would be smart, we would only do larger hotels. But no, it's not necessary.
Could we just ask you a small follow-on to that same thing? Meanwhile, you're opening a 450-bedroom hotel in Dubai. Is that making you a little bit more anxious as you watch the snow melt?
It might not sound fair, but not really, because it's a different... I mean, we've started all our hotels based on lease agreements or ownership, and there you take a lot of risk, obviously, because you have to pay the lease no matter what happens. But in Dubai, it's for the first time a relationship between a big company, Accor, namely, who bought some shares from us, plus the owners in Dubai. So it's like a franchise agreement, and we can, so to say, give the Dubai property our input, our ideas of how we create the hotel, but we don't take that much of a risk, and therefore we can sort of play with it. I hope the owners don't hear that, but we can be very creative and free, and we hope that we can do something nice. And certainly I feel very responsible for the success of it, but we will not go bankrupt if it doesn't work. But it's still a big question why we did it. For me, it's an adventure. And many people ask me, is 25 hours the right brand to be so big and to be in Dubai and things like that. But I'm still very happy that we do it. And we have on the other side projects in Florence, which are much different, and in Copenhagen, which will be very beautiful. So we are quite diverse still when it comes to that.
A highlight there from our hospitality panel at the Chief Summit last month in Switzerland. The Italian concept of agriturismo is a long-standing one. Idyllic farms inviting visitors to live, work, and more importantly, eat in more remote locations are dotted all over the country. In Puglia, it's common to find these rural retreats in the form of a converted masseria, a farmhouse complex common to the area. With some holidaymakers still cautious about booking urban vacations, the masseria is providing an accommodation option that is able to thrive under the current conditions, as well as presenting a business model with growing appeal to the up-and-coming hotelier. Journalist Anastasia Miari visited one such masseria to see the full potential it offers and sent us this report.
Unlike Amalfi, Liguria and Tuscany, the Puglian countryside is still relatively unplundered in terms of its tourist potential. Architecturally speaking, there are hidden gems everywhere. Aristocratic and stately mansions, like the impeccably designed Palazzo Daniele in the otherwise skippable Galliano del Capo region, are now drawing people south, purely for the experience of enjoying a beautiful design hotel with vintage Italian tiles, mid-century lighting and impossibly high ceilings. The hotel concept that has really taken off here, however, is the renaissance of the masseria.
Masseria is the old word for farmhouse. Mm-hmm. So it's where the farmer would live. Il massaro is the farmer. It's a typical Pugliese name. And there are a lot of them in the countryside. And now, slowly, they have been refitted to become very charming hotels. But in old days, they were the massaro would live there. It would be a part of the property where the, on the same land, perhaps, where the more fancy building where the owners would live, or the owners would live in the city in their palazzi and visit the land, and the massaro would live on the land with the animals and take care of them.
That was Diana Bianchi, owner of the dramatic Castello di Ugento Hotel and Culinary School in the south of Puglia, on the hotel concept that's drawing people to the heel of Italy. As well as renovating a dramatic 16th century castle, Bianchi has also taken on a masseria. Typical for Italy's traditionally agricultural region of Puglia, masserias were once farm complexes, built and thriving from the 16th to the 19th century. Now, cosmopolitan Italians are once again seeing the value in country living. They're moving out of densely populated cities like Milan to run sprawling masserias. In the past, nobles in charge of procuring olive oil, wine, and various cereals would own a masseria. Traditionally, this is not just a barn, but a series of buildings, usually set around a large square courtyard, sometimes even fortified with towers, depending on how wealthy and important the owners were. In Manduria, the Masseria Potenti, managed by Chiara Esther Benedetta Tomasino, who you're just about to hear, is the perfect example of a masseria brought back to life. Here we are, taking a tour through the whitewashed, cacti-populated paradise that has become a bolt hole for those wanting a truly rural Italian escape. With a side of luxury, of course.
So, welcome in the Masseria Potenti. This property belonged to my parents, and we bought the property 15 years ago. We renovated at the beginning our house for vacation, and then we convert in a secondary moment in agritourism. At the moment, we have 150 hectares, and we produce wine, oil, all our vegetable, and we try to use all our vegetable in our restaurant. So we try to respect the ancient philosophy in which masseria has to be autosubsistent. So everything was produced in the house.
Can you describe where we are now?
So we are in the ancient court where there were the sheep, and this court is from the 17th century. At the moment, it's used for welcome dinner party. And we used to love to have long table where all our guests share the table and stay here in an area that is indoor, but at the same time is close to the garden. In the summer, we adding all our oregano, our chili. At the moment, it's the time of chili.
It's very colourful in here. And there's lots of rosemary as well, isn't there, hanging from every ceiling.
Exactly.
We're under these amazing white arches. And how old is the Masseria?
So the Masseria, the first document is from 15th century, and then it was built according to the needs. The Masseria belonged to a very rich and powerful family. That's why it's called the Masseria Potenti, because in Italian it means powerful, potenti. And it was belonged to this family.
Now, the Masseria welcomes guests from all over the world into rooms oozing with character, dotted with vintage furniture, and decorated with details that always nod to the building's rich past. In my room, a dried bunch of oregano hangs from the four-poster bed, draped in vintage linens collected by Chiara's mother, Maria Grazia.
So this is the oldest part of the Masseria.
How old?
This is from the 16th century, in the 17th century.
So what used to go on in this enormous room with these arches?
It's a cover for like a shadow place for hanging, for example, the tomato. You see all the nails here, all the tobacco they use.
So all the nails that are in the roof
were for tomatoes hanging, for pomodoro di pennola. Yeah.
At the moment, blood red chilies hang from almost every part of the communal spaces. Either that or drying bunches of herbs. But it isn't all for show. Masseria Potenti still produces its own olive oil and wine and makes use of all the fruit and veg growing here for guests' breakfast, lunch and dinners. The feeling here is of conviviality. The owners are based here. They sit down for lunch with guests, and guests in turn all begin to engage with each other. It feels less like a hotel but being welcomed into the warm, bustling home of an Italian mamma. Further north, just outside the pretty white town of Ostuni, set amongst acres of olive trees, Masseria Morosetta, purpose-built in the past 5 years, has the same feeling, in spite of its very modern design-led interiors. Here I'm chatting to chef and part owner Giorgia Goggi, who moved here from Milan to create delicately balanced dishes that sing with the abundance of Mediterranean produce grown at the Masseria.
Home feeling is what we really care about.
Would you say that's the crux of what a Masseria should be?
Absolutely,
mean now?
Yeah. We really want our guests to be part of it, to feel like at home. And it's super beautiful because people really feel it, and after like a couple of hours, guests go together to the restaurant. After one day, they chat for hours after breakfast.
It does feel like that.
And they do come back year after year. So we do have this returning guest week, 1 week per month, in which we do give priority to our friends.
The Masseria, then, has become a hospitality concept about extolling the virtues of the Puglian countryside. Yes, inviting swimming pools have taken the place of roaming farm animals, but a sense of deep respect for the landscape, for seasonal produce, and for an authentic rural life remains. For those who spent lockdown in densely populated concrete cities, a vacation in a Masseria is surely the ultimate escape.
Anastasia Miari there, reporting from Puglia. Well, that's all for this edition of The Urbanist. Today's episode was produced by Carlotta Rabello and David Stevens. David also edited the show. And to play you out of this week's episode, well, here's Elvis Presley with Heartbreak Hotel. Thank you for listening, city lovers.
Although it's always crowded, you still can find some room for broken-hearted lovers to cry there in the gloom. Be so, be so lonely, baby, be so lonely, be so lonely, they could die. Man, the bellhop's tears keep flowing, the desk clerk's dressed in black. Well, they've been so long.